The economy grows, but maybe not as fast or broadly as we'd like. From Marketplace in New York, I'm Mark Garrison in for David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. We've got new numbers just out this morning about the growth of the U.S. economy. Let's get into those and what they might mean with Diane Swonk at DS Economics. Good morning, Diane.
Good morning.
So 1.4% GDP growth in the second quarter, that's better than the first, but I don't know, is that where we want to be?
Certainly not. I mean, we saw first half of the year growth at 1.1%, which is nothing to write home about. In fact, about the slowest pace that we've seen since the expansion started. The good news is we continued to tick off some employment gains during the first half of the year and through the summer. And even though we had this tepid growth, wages continued to rise at a little bit of an elevated pace, and incomes continued to be buoyant. Consumers actually were spending in the second quarter. So the good news is slow as growth was, we seem to have hit some kind of tipping point where we're finally bringing more people into the mix. And although the tide is not lifting all boats, a few boats are finally being lifted. We're finally seeing some of those poverty numbers, which had shot up during the height of the recession and in the years that followed, kind of being eroded a bit.
Yeah, we've been looking for that. When is this recovery going to show up in a way that people feel it in their pocketbooks? What's it going to take to see that later this year?
Well, we're looking for a little bit stronger growth in the second half of the year, but again, even solid gains are not going to be spectacular given the weak growth we started with. And I think what we really need to see is, you know, the Federal Reserve has sort of tapped all the tools that it has to be able to stimulate the economy. They're hoping to try to pull out of their equation, but really it's time for some reforms with fiscal policy. We are looking for next year to see some stimulus. We really do need that investment in infrastructure, something that everyone at least agrees upon. We all know how bad the potholes are and how bad those overpasses are on those bridges.
Okay, Diane Swonk, thanks very much.
Thank you.
A vote later this morning could change how you watch TV. It involves the set-top box, which if you read your cable bill closely, may be costing you a couple $100 a year. You would think cable companies could simply provide an app instead of an ugly hunk of plastic. Technically, they can, but making that happen is tricky. The FCC votes on this matter today. Marketplace's Adam Allington explains why dumping the box is harder than it seems.
The proposal would require cable companies to offer a free app, allowing customers to access programming from their TVs, tablets, smartphones, whatever. But that's not as simple as it sounds, says Congressman Tony Cardenas, a Democrat from California.
The basic issue? Not complicated. How to get it done? Very complicated.
Cardenas is one of 64 members of Congress raising concerns to the FCC chairman that the app ruling could upend complex and competitive licensing agreements.
It's copyright. It's intellectual property. It's who gets allowed to unlock someone's information.
Cardenas also questioned whether the FCC has the jurisdiction to mandate these agreements, but John Bergmayer, an attorney at Public Knowledge, a consumer advocacy group, says apps won't change anything about cable's basic business model.
This isn't a la carte. This isn't breaking up the cable bundle or anything like that. This is just saying that whatever the existing bundle is, people should access on devices they might already have.
Even if the proposal passes, Bergmayer says it could still be 2 years out until compliance kicks in. I'm Adam Allington for Marketplace.
Rules that make it easier for companies to fly drones will have impact on many businesses, from farming to real estate to media. One sector that's especially interested in putting drones in the sky, the insurance industry. From WNPR in Connecticut, Patrick Scahill explains.
I'm at Claim University. It's a giant warehouse operated by Travelers where insurance adjusters go to train. Inside are dinged-up cars, damaged storefronts, and big model houses. And while you might not think of insurance adjusters as risk takers, Patrick Gee, who works on auto and property claims for Travelers, says they can be.
It's obviously whenever you climb ladders or you get up on a roof, despite well-trained claim professionals with safety standards, there's always the risk of an accident occurring.
Which gets us to that buzzing noise. It's a tiny drone hovering over our heads. As Gee talks, it zips over the model house's shingled roof and snaps photos of damage.
Often if we need to evaluate a roof that's really complicated and very, very steep, we might need to bring in an outside expert that's specially trained with all the harnesses and rigging to evaluate damage on steep roofs.
But now that FAA regulations have been loosened, Guy says a certified adjuster could stay off that roof entirely, flying a drone to get all the pictures they need on their first visit.
It'll be something that most field people will have a drone in their trunk or in their back pocket.
Jay Jablowski is with Hartford Steam Boiler, an insurance company that, among other things, you guessed it, covers steam boilers, sometimes several stories tall.
We're looking at, can we actually use drones inside the boiler to get some of the information so we don't necessarily have to set up the scaffolding inside of a boiler?
Tom Carroll, general counsel at the National Association of Mutual Insurance Companies, says the use of drones could extend beyond individual claims. Think large-scale disasters.
If you have a limited amount of appraisers and a limited amount of people that can actually go there and the place is fairly inaccessible, that drone can maybe do the work of 10 people in the time of one.
Back at the training site at Travelers, Patrick Guy says as fall weather brings rain, hail, or
possibly a hurricane,
hundreds of adjusters will ramp up their training, getting certified in the hopes of using more drones and fewer ladders while out taking claims. In Hartford, I'm Patrick Scahill for Marketplace.
And finally, the budget of yet another Olympics is exploding. A panel set up by Tokyo's governor says the cost of hosting the 2020 Summer Games could top $30 billion. That's unless some serious budget cutting happens. That is a fourfold increase of cost estimates since Japan won the bid. In New York, I'm Mark Garrison with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.